That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Wrestling Art with Chris Things.
Do the hammerlock. I do the hammerlock. Do the hammerlock, you turkey necks. Yeah, do the hammerlock. I do the hammerlock.
Hi, pals. Welcome back to another edition of Wrestling Art with Chris Things. I am Chris Things, Brian, your host. Dude, hopefully you'd consider a friend. You know, if you've been listening to this show a little while, we are bloody 35 episodes deep in this thing. And, you know, I'd like to think even if you've finally started a little bit, we've got a little bit of rapport going, you know? So I'd like to think that I could consider me a pal. And I consider you guys pals too. So if you ever want to reach out and say, "Sup, Chris, what's going on?" You know, I always appreciate it. But we're back after a little bit of a hiatus. We had last week off, which between you and me, I did feel a bit guilty about. I was off, you know, on holiday, on vacation for the week away in Tasmania. So I wanted to do all the normal things that I do every week, but at a certain point, you know, you gotta draw a little bit of a line here. So I'm sorry I didn't have an episode for you last week, but we're making up for it this week. We're back to our match of the week edition of the podcast, where we talk about my favorite match that I happened to watch that week, so much so that I made an art of it. And we chop it up and we talk about that. But so we got three to talk about here. So we got a triple header main event, triple match of the week edition here. Got my dear friend Jeremy coming on the show a little bit later to talk about that. But before that, again, I just wanted to mention, you know, I this triple way to Tasmania, right? And so I wasn't able to do the episode. I still made sure to do the match of the week when I was down there. You know, every Friday in Australia, every Thursday for y'all in America. It's very important to me that I get this match of the week up. It you know, it probably sort of rings back a little bit to that wonderful conversation that I had with Matt Charlton, Shining Wizard Designs, on our last episode. Haven't listened to that yet, please do. A delightful time. But yeah, it's sort of like, I think I feel a bit like it's a responsibility. It's like I have to do it, rain, hail, or shine. I have to get this art up. And, you know, it's not like I feel like I have a contract in place or whatever. A lot of it's probably in my own head, but it's important to me. So I got that done. I was happy with that. The last of our match of the week, so we'll be talking about today, the Bull Nakano versus Kyoko Inoue one. But yeah, it got me thinking, you know, I was like, okay, I got that done. But no, there is a little bit of a pang of guilt that I felt from taking a week off from doing all my art things. Especially at a time when I'm trying to do everything that I possibly can to push this thing uphill, you know, make it the full-time career that I'm really wanting it to be, And that requires the work. It just requires you to be working all the time. So then to take a week off, gallivant around Tasmania, and I did feel a little guilty about that. So probably shouldn't. You know, I think we all need that balance. We all need a little bit of a break sometimes, especially if it's something that you're so passionate about, that you're thinking about 24/7. I think it's very important to detach. I think that's something I probably need to embrace a little bit. Let go of that guilt, and be like, okay, sometimes you get to have a break. But I think that detachment was good. It sort of got me back to this week with like a real new sort of like fervent energy to want to do all of the things, to want to kick all the goals. So I've got a super big month looking here on my events page of christhings.com.au of on-location events that I'm going to be doing in the month of July. Actually starting this Saturday with the Great Artist Market at Fallon's Barrel Hall in Brisbane, Australia, where I, along with 50 other rad local artists, will be doing this thing. And it's an artist market. It's free. If you want to come along, please do. I'll have all my fancy prints. I'll have some originals. I'll have some new stuff that I've never had before at any of these other markets. So hopefully that's exciting for you. T-shirts. I've just got some fresh T-shirts. I hear they're ready to pick up, so I'll have those for the event. But yeah, things are going to be a good time. But then I've got so much other stuff going on for July as well. Honestly, a little bit scary, but also, you know, kind of exciting. I feel like I'm really like, all right, we're back doing all the things. Here we go. I've got wrestling shows I'm going to be selling my art at, different makers markets, all sorts of stuff. So I'm going to be busy, but I'm happy about that. But yeah, if you all want to jump on there, if you're in the Brisbane area or Sydney or Melbourne, I'm going to be traveling all over, but I'm stoked to be doing so. So yeah, exciting times up ahead. I get to meet some of y'all and have a little bit of a chat face to face, because that really is a very fulfilling thing for me to get to do. Another big significant kind of development, I actually had that current art show that I've had up at Scratch, the big solo show that I got to do. It was an excellent experience. Finally, that was taken down. I got to come around to the Scratch and see it for last time last night before it came down. And I just did that on my own. You know, I went along and I just I wanted to sort of soak it up one last time while it's on the walls. You know, sort of look at the achievement of doing a show like that, because it was a lot of work, and I put a lot of work and passion into that thing. And you know, part of it, I went along and you do look at the little red dots, you know, on the price cards next to the artworks. And look, you know, to be honest, not all of the things sold. But that's okay. That's not the overall goal here. You know, it's obviously good when I do make money at these things, but I'm not doing it for that. You know, I think it was the actual accomplishment of doing it, of putting that all together, of doing a solo show, of putting the time and love into it. I think that's the important thing. So I will have some of these artworks, these originals and framed fancy prints available at some of these future in-person events, so you have that to look forward to, and I will be, you know, posting them online for all of my friends who are not in the Brisbane area for you guys to get to enjoy it as well. So yeah, that was a fun little moment, a nice little sort of moment for me to reflect, I guess. But outside of that, I've got a fun little thing for you here. So, my dear friend, John Craft, who I've had on the show before, he sent me a little message yesterday as a little audio update for a fun little thing that happened. And I thought I'd share that with you today. I thought you might dig this. I love this story. This really tickled me. So, just a sec, let me be very professional here. I'm I don't actually know how to import this audio, so I'm just going to hold it up to the speaker. I think that'll be okay. The height of professionalism here. Let's see what John Kraft, a former roving Mexican reporter who's not actually Mexican from the previous podcast, he has a little anecdote for some local Chicago wrestling happenings. All right, here we go. Take it away, John.
Chicago was Friday and Saturday, and then Deadlock Pro, a newer indie, was running a show at Logan Square Auditorium on Sunday. Speedball was at the TNA taping for Saturday, and then he was also advertised as on the card for Deadlock Pro on Sunday. So anyways, Sunday, we're mulling about the Logan Square Farmers Market, just kind of walking around checking it out. It's definitely one of the bigger ones in town. And we saw that there was like a shitty lucha ring set up. And they had mentioned that they were going to have matches at 1 o'clock. So we're, like, walking around, checking everything out. It's hot as shit. And anyways, like, we go back to watch the start of the Lucha show. And I shit you not, it's, like, a bunch of no-name wrestlers, right? Like, I'd never heard of most of these people. A couple of them I'd worked with at Galley Lucha Libre in Chicago. But then I hear the announcer go, Mike Bailey. And I turn to Marcella and I'm like, what did he just say? And sure enough, Speedball comes out. He wrestles and the canvas is super hot. He was barefoot. So he ends up like asking like somebody for a bottle, like their bottle of water and like dumping it on his feet. And then he just wrestles outside the ring. He picks up the win. So I message him on Facebook because we're Facebook friends and everything. And I'm like, hey, it's Bandito's friend. Just a question, like, what, or I think I just said, like, what a treat to see you at the farmer's market. And he immediately messages me back, and he's like, ah, dude, I was just walking by. He said he was trying to go to Logan Square Auditorium, it was the daytime, and drop his bags off, but he couldn't get inside, and nobody was there yet, so he had to kill time, and he was just walking around the farmer's market, and he saw the wrestling ring. And there was a tent set up for, like, a locker room. And so he goes in there and he goes, hey, I was just curious if I could leave my bag in here. And then somehow they were like, I mean, do you want to wrestle? And it was a free show, so, like, everybody was working for free. But he just worked for free. And he didn't, like, kill himself or anything, but yeah.
I love that story so darn much. Just so you know, he did not like send that in you know, with the idea that I was going to put this on the show. He just sent that in for my own amusement. What a bloody sweetheart Mike Bailey is. just so you know, I did officially, you know, ask John if he was comfortable with me putting that on here. He said he was, so I think that was great. We'll see how we go in the future. Maybe we can get more roving Chicago wrestling anecdotes such as this from John Kraft. That tickled me so much. All right. I think that does us up for now. I think we're ready for some match of the week action. Let's throw over to Chris and James Vanderbeek in the studio. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I am very excited for the latest match of the week. We actually have three matches of the week to discuss, a triple header, and no one that I would more prefer to discuss said matches with than the esteemed uncle of Beaks, James Vanderbeek.
Terry, wait a minute.
Welcome to the
show. I don't think that's how it works out. I'm not the uncle of all Beaks. I am just the Uncle Beak, the epitome of all beakiness. No, that's ridiculous. Hey, Chris, what's going on?
Good take. I'm honestly stoked we got to do this one. It was a little bit up in the air, right? You just told me before we started recording, you had
a little dicey.
A tree fall on a transformer at your work. The power went out. You weren't sure you're going to be able to make it.
Technically, I work from home, so a tree fell in the transformer locally and knocked out the power for the entire neighborhood. And evidently, my stepmom said the entire town of Milltown, or Milton as it's called. I just assumed it's a derivative from Milltown. But yeah, man, I took a nap because I was like tired. I'm like on my lunch break. I'm like, I'm gonna, you know, get a couple winks. And I woke up and I'm like, oh man, looks like a fuse got blown in my room and my power is out. So I went out and I'm like, hey, Karen, the room's out, or the power's out in my room. Karen's my stepmom. And she says, no, power's out in the entire town, dude. So yeah, I had to let my boss know that I could no longer work. And it was out for about 2 hours.
Dang.
Yeah, maybe a little bit longer. So then I had to rally, get my work done, and then watch 3 incredible professional wrestling matches so I can talk to my friend on the other side of the world about pro graps.
Oh, well, I certainly appreciate it, my friend.
Yeah, I do what I can for this beautiful podcast you have here.
Oh, thank you. I hope said matches were worth the hecticness that you had to go through there.
They were all very enjoyable. I let you know, when you sent me the list, I was very excited because it's, once again, an eclectic mix. But I made the same mistake that I made previously.
Oh, no.
I ended up watching the Yave match last, so I'm like... like, oh man, I mean, I love all of this, but I need some excitement. And then I really, but yeah, same mistake as before. I should have saved Stan and Andre or Bull and Kyoko for the fucking final match to watch.
Man, that is the rule. You cannot watch Lucha Libre after watching Japanese wrestling. I don't know why, but as we said last time, it doesn't work.
And I love like both styles. It's just like once you're basically brought to orgasm by the awesome Japanese wrestling, you're like, oh man, this is like real chill.
it's like listening to some like easygoing jazz after coming back from a metal concert.
Yeah, exactly. You're trying to relax and watching these guys grapple, and you're like, you know, this is too relaxing. I might fall asleep. But no, it's still a great match. Don't get me wrong.
Well, I was honestly stoked about this weird trio of matches that we got. So I wasn't planning on it being 3. I had the latest of the curator episodes where I got to have the Shining Wizard Designs on the show the other week, which I was stoked about. Everyone, please give that a listen. Matt is a lovely, lovely bloke. But then I had a trip. I went on vacation, as y'all Americans have come to call it.
Don't you call it holiday?
Yeah, we say we go on holidays here.
I mean, it's fun both ways.
Yeah, it's probably for me it sounds fun and exotic sounding, saying vacation, and then for you guys it's the opposite, I guess.
Exactly. Like I say, ooh, I'm going on holiday.
So yeah, went to lovely scenic Tasmania, beautiful Ooh. Place. I'd never been there before. The island of the Tasmanian devil. I hear there are various little human suplex machines running about.
Oh, watch out there. Don't mention that name. You might get him mad at you.
Yeah. It's funny you bring that up. I initially was like, oh, cranky Taz. But then did you watch his sort of like explanation video?
Yeah, but that made me think he's even a bigger dork because he's basically crying.
So for those playing at home, so Jordan Grace came out and she posted one of her jacked up pictures or whatever with the caption of "Beat me if you can, survive if you let me," if I let you. So the famous catchphrase of the human suplex machine Taz in ECW, and so Taz. You know, he doesn't know who the fuck Jordan Grace is. He's just like, oh, this is a worker trying to steal my shit.
No, he knew. He says, I know her. I respect her work. And he just doesn't like anybody mentioning his catchphrase.
I respect it, dude. I'm like, if you have your shit nailed down little that strong. Hard, I
little
like
strong.
It.
It's not like she was trying to fucking make any money. He like felt like she was trying to make money off this tweet. He's like, in his explanation, he basically goes, I didn't know she was like trying to, you know, create a t-shirt. Like, he immediately goes to AEW's style of creating merchandise where somebody says something and they automatically slap it on a fucking shirt. But honestly, I have experience with Taz being kind of a cranky bee, and I love Taz.
Oh, yeah, because you had the meme, awesome. Right? That he didn't like.
Yeah. So I fucking, people may not know, but a while back, I make all these stupid memes, if people don't know who the fuck I am, where I mash up wrestlers or celebrities with wrestlers, or sometimes wrestlers and wrestling personalities. Todd Grisham, I think that's who it was, had this big hubbub where he apparently was sending girls messages where he said he wanted to face fuck them. And I, you know, I respect that kind of thing.
I think you can't just throw that around here. I don't think that was actually Todd Grisham, wasn't it? That tall dude? Who was famed for like sort of squatting down when he was like interviewing people?
That yeah, I thought that was him. Todd, or is it Tom?
That's Tom something. I think isn't Todd Grisham
Tom
the one?
Tom
the one...
Phillips.
Yes. Here you are, okay. Slandering poor.
I bet Todd Grisham face fucks too, dude. Don't get me wrong. Come on, you're gonna say that Todd Grisham doesn't face fuck? Is that what you're trying to proclaim here?
Who's
anyway,
to
yeah. I think it was Todd Phillips, who, ironically enough, Kevin Owens used to always call Todd to fuck with him on the show. So maybe that's how I got fouled up. Regardless, he's sending these hot messages to these hot chicks and got caught up. So I decided, hey, you know, it'd be fun combining Taz and this Tom Todd character into the human face fuck machine. And I had it up for a while, and it was Taz's body and Tom Todd's face. And all of a sudden I get a message from, I think it was Court, because I was on MLW doing a podcast at that time. Ooh. And Court's like, hey man, Taz doesn't really like this and he's asking me to ask you to take it down. I'd appreciate it if you would. And I'm like, what? So I did relent. I did take it down just because I didn't need the human suplex machine mad at me. But the guy is a bit temperamental.
That is so. I've never actually heard you give like the full story explanation. I had no idea that it was Court that reached out to you. That's hilarious.
And it might have been Court reaching out to Farmer who reached out to me, because I know I definitely got a DM where somebody who I worked with at MLW told me to pull that shit down, and it was definitely coming from the top. I guess Taz reached out to Court, and you know, the shit slides downhill, pal.
So good.
But anyway, yeah, Jordan was just having fun quoting this wrestler who evidently, just to add a little more to this, Taz stole his catchphrase from fucking the Grappler, apparently.
Hey, he didn't steal. He expanded upon. So it's standard okay. As the beat me if you can, or beat me if I let you, and then he did it like, you know.
He's sampling and getting upset that he's sampling portions of catchphrases. This is not a fucking term paper. We don't need to cite our sources when we're tweeting. What the fuck?
I did think her one was a bit vague. She just had the caption, so we didn't know whether she's like, "Hey, I'm the new human suplex machine."
This no is... one who would jump to that conclusion. That's in only Taz.
It's a hilarious anyway. Set of circumstances.
Oh, it's so great! I love it all. Yeah, and then Taz coming with the video where he's just trying to explain because everyone got on his ass, and he looks like he's basically about to cry. I'm like, hey man, I guess he really cares about those trademarks. That's what it comes down to.
Hey man, you were a wrestler in the 90s. So you had to lock that shit down. You had to be protective. So, and I imagine he had to go through a lot of shit to try to prevent WWE from having the trademark from that. So maybe he's a bit, you know, like you were saying, a little bit gun shy.
Yeah, sure. It also goes with this, like, he really is like that guy. Anytime anybody wears orange and black, he's like, you guys are stealing my gimmick over here. The man owns orange and black, Chris.
Hey, orange and black is hard to pull off. I had a orange and black t-shirt. Do you ever hear about the Australian band The Beards?
The Beards? I don't know, but that's an awesome name.
Tremendous band. The entire thing of this band, a little tangent here, is just their passion for beard growing. And every song they have is about male facial hair. That's and Yeah. Oh, all about it. Talking about committing to a bit, man. The best. But I have this
for sure.
This black t-shirt with an orange beard on it. And man, I'll be darned. I tried to pull that off, but I just don't think it worked. I couldn't do it. So, you know, people who
think there might be a problem with your approach here, because you are a man with an orange beard trying to rock a shirt with an orange beard on it. People are like, what the fuck is going on here, guy? You're a mark for your own beard.
See, that may have been the issue. I didn't think about this. Maybe that's what's going on here. I don't know.
I'm sorry I'm so ranty today. I'm like all worked up. I'm hyped on cold brew. I'm ready to podcast. I'm a little stoned, so
I like it. You're pepped up. I'm into
yes,
it.
Sir.
I'm into passion, dude. This is fun. I think we've got a good episode on our hands. I had the holiday, and then I get back and I'm like, fuck, I've got three matches of the week that we have to get through now. So that's what we have. That's what we have today. But I was really stoked. As you said, I looked at them and I'm like, this is quite an eclectic mix. You know, we have a match from the early 80s between Stan Hansen and Andre the Giant that is just bloody delightful.
Fucking phenomenal.
I think this is the greatest Andre the Giant match I have ever seen. Just
hands down.
So
full
good.
Stop, as they say in some areas of the world.
Then we get a tremendous, as you said, like a Yave showcase, but also like just Blue Panther, who, for everyone who doesn't know, my favorite luchador of all time, dude who is in his early to mid 60s now, just
playing the hits,
just pulling it all out. You know, the Blue Panther showcase. It had Yave. It had drama. It just made me so happy again, just watching Blue Panther do his thing, and Hetchicero, so rad as well. And then we went on to a tremendous Joshi match that is one of my very favorite matches. I think a perfect, you know, showcase of the greatness of Kyoko Inoue and Bull Nakano, and just all of the great things of early 90s All Japan women, and the violence and the stiffness and the emotion and all of the things. So all these three, I think they all go well together. I think the linking theme, if I had to put one on it, is they all are matches that have like an excellent emotion to them. Like they're all very expressive, if you kind of get what I'm putting down.
Sure. 100%. Yeah, I have not seen either of these two older matches, and this new match, like, literally just came out 2 weeks ago, so I couldn't have, but these are like legendary matches that people should seek out 100%. Probably the greatest women's match I've seen in a long time, if not always. And then Stan Hansen and fucking Andre just beating the crap of each other. It's something to see. It's a fucking spectacle.
So good. So we, in the interest of us not going forever, I'm trying to shoot from the hip here. You know, let's just go for overall thoughts. We don't have to go hold by hold, unless you have a specific area where you thought the hold by holds are excellent and you had some notes for us. But I'm leaning into your thoughts, man. I'm really interested because you're having just freshly watched these. We get your immediate reactions, and I'm gonna be honest. This may be a lack of preparation, but I haven't even actually rewatched these matches.
You son of a bitch. Well, I can definitely not go hold for hold. I don't need to. I can like breeze through things I have listed and see what's important to me, per se. First one I watched was Andre and Stan. And you know me, I like to kind of get a vibe of the room. This place is fucking packed to the rafters. It was... You couldn't see more people. It's ridiculous.
So this match took place to put the official things in here. A gargantuan battle from September 23rd, 1981 for New Japan Pro Wrestling. Their Bloody Fight Series 81.
I was one year old.
Dude, I was minus 5 years old.
I was still in my father's balls. No, that's not how it works.
And this one took place at the big Tokyo Denon Coliseum, which I don't think exists anymore. And yeah, there were a whole gaggle of people, but I think apparently over 13,000 fans in attendance, and they were bloody rabid. And you know what was the first thing that stood out to me? They bloody loved Stan Hansen so much.
Well, they fear as well. Like they were afraid and respected him at the same time. But yeah, they love Stan Hansen, and they're just like in awe of Andre. So everything he does, they just pop so huge for. Andre and Stan both look crazy young. That's the first thing that struck me. Like, look at these fucking guys. And where was Andre at in his career here? Had he been to the WWE before? Or WWE wasn't even like a full thing. WWF, I guess.
He was like, I think a real, what's it, like a special attraction wrestler for WWF, for the Vince, the original Vince McMahon. So it was obviously a big name there. All the stuff through the different territories, you know, already a massive name in Japan, Canada, France. Like, you know, he was fucking the man already, even though we'd never sort of like had the sort of run for Vince Jr. and the famous sort of like Hulkamania feud and all of that kind of thing.
I knew it was before that, but I just wasn't sure. Because, man, the guy could freaking move. The super long hair on him just makes him look like a giant maniac. And it just, when he's running, it's just blowing in the wind. And I'm like, this guy, no wonder he was such a attraction. And people just like, we got to get an Andre into our town to make some fucking money.
Beautiful, like, afro. I just love Andre with the afro, dude.
And like right at the top, like, doing crazy stuff I've never seen before. Stan rushes him literally at the start of the match. He does a big boot as he's walking over the top rope.
Right? He's going, he's doing his like step over the top rope into the ring. Stan comes after him, and then mid, while he's got his big foot, he hits him with his sick big boot. I was like, as soon as that moment took place, I was like, dude, this match is everything.
Yeah, and Andre just sells so crazy for Stan, like stuff I didn't expect. Like, just nuts, because Stan was a badass and a huge star, so of course he's gonna do business. But if Andre didn't want to, he didn't need to, and he just making this guy look fucking great by flying all over the place.
Oh, for sure. And we saw, you know, we've seen matches with Andre over the years against dudes who are like fucking legitimate badasses who could murder anyone, like, you know, Akira Maeda, for example. And if Andre is not a fan of you, it does not matter, because he is not doing much, if you ever saw that Maeda versus Andre match. But if he respected someone, which obviously he had a lot of respect for Hansen here, because he gave him a lot, but it was Hansen like laid all of his shit in and then some as well, so he earned it.
Oh, for sure. And then Andre's busting crazy shit out. Like, I've never seen Andre do a double wrist lock in my life. I was like, what the hell is going on here? Is Sakuraba the Giant? Bananas.
Dude, I loved, like, we had some big sort of like blows at the start, and then it like broke down, and we actually got to see some wrestling from like full these two huge motherfuckers, and I loved it. Like, the actual wrestling was tight, and like I got it from sort of like a psychological kind of like standpoint of like, all right, let's slow down the sort of you know, crazy explosive dynamism of Stan Hansen by, you know, locking on a hold kind of thing. I really dug it.
Oh yeah, it was killer. Like, before got into the grappling, like Andre did that huge bump off the turnbuckle through the ropes and almost rolling outside. Like, he was doing stuff I had never seen the guy do before, so it was really impressive. And then just to put over how giving Andre was, the body slam that they did was so picture perfect. Like, Andre fully rotated for Stan. It was fucking great.
So much better than the Hogan one, right?
So much better. It was a thing of beauty. I was blown away. I had a feeling it happened in this match, so I hit my friend a message like, Stan fucking slammed Andre in this one. It's fucking awesome. I have this friend Rachel up in Canada. I actually went and visited her again this past weekend, and we went and saw some wrestling, but I told her we were watching this, and she's like, that sounds awesome. I sent her the link, so she's probably going to check it out. So good.
Lovely. I look forward to her thoughts.
Yes, indeed. Let me see what else did I have written down here. Oh, yeah. So Andre was getting, he was on, trying to get up, and Stan drops this crazy elbow on the back of his neck that Andre sold like death. Like, he collapsed instantly and eventually came up. And then really quick after that, the match kind of got ended when they went out to the outside. What exactly happened? Was there a 10 count? Did the referee just think they were getting too nuts and had to tell these guys to fucking chill out? What occurred?
Yeah, so it was a count out.
Okay.
So
I didn't hear anybody counting. So
I mean, most of these matches back in the day, you know, if you have a big name versus big name, you know, as we saw with the, you know, a lot of those Abdullah the Butcher kind of like matches, like all these matches would always sort of end in a count out. It was sort of like the standard in Japanese wrestling until kind of UWF came around and started doing clean finishes and then forced the other companies to do so as a result. But I thought it was interesting the way they did it, where we sort of got the count out on the outside, and both of them are like, restart this fucking match, and then finally we get the
so
match.
Much so they bully the referee. Yes. They bully the referee, and then also the ring announcer guy into restarting for it. It's so funny.
Oh, man.
Like, Andre even grabs the referee and pulls him over to Arnold Skolnick and says, hey, Arnold, explain to him how this. It's so good.
Man. And then the funniest part is I'm like, man, we're gonna get like a fucking clean finish here. What the fuck? And then, you know, we get some more rad wrestling.
Shenanigans.
Including like what I fucking Andre's big boot at this point. He just like hits it like he that it's like
a tree stump.
Oh, and it's so stiff as well. Yeah. Like, oh, so good. And he's true just like test. Like, I've never seen anyone, obviously, like, you know, Stan Hansen is a massive man. And we know, you know, Andre is you know, the Andre the Giant, so he's big boy. But I've never seen Andre's sort of, like, sheer power as much as this, where he's just, like, there's moments where it's, like, he's not even doing, like, a big move or whatever. He's just kind of, like, flinging Stan Hansen or, like, doing something to him. And the way he just, like, moves him around... I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, it's really impressive. Like, there was one time when he had them probably somewhere in the series of your illustration, both arms locked behind him, and Stan tries to move to the apron to get away, and Andre's just like, nah, fuck you, whips him back into the center of the ring like he was a baby.
Yeah.
It was fucking rad.
Like, this is like a 300-pound man.
Yeah, fucking thrown around like crazy. All right, then you got to explain a little bit here toward the end.
So then it finishes with, so it, I'm just a little bit fuzzy, but so Andre goes for the big boot. Stan, like, runs past it, hits him with the big classic lariat. And then
Andre rolls, bumps all the way to the outside,
yeah,
and puts on an elbow pad. Is this like a loaded elbow pad? Because everyone was trying to, no, Andre, you can't have an elbow pad.
I took it that he's like, yep, no, I'm bringing in the loaded elbow pad. That was my assumption.
That's what I figured as well, but I, like, you know, no, literally no translation.
Like, he was on the heels of defeat. He'd just taken the lariat, you know, and he's basically lucky to still be in this. He happened to fall to the outside, so he's coming back with the elbow pad, and then it just falls amok and it gets thrown out again, right?
Yeah, when the ref tries to take the elbow pad from Andre, and Andre's like, you know what? Hey, referee, you're eating the elbow pad. Then it's over.
I mean, you can only try to corral two kaiju monsters like this, you know, so much. It's just chaos.
As my friend Rachel would say, these big boys like to roughhouse.
But yeah, such a tremendous match. I mean, like you're saying, we didn't get like sort of a concise finish, but you rarely would in matches at this time. But for what it was like such a spectacle. And again, like, just seeing Andre do stuff that you'd never seen. Like, Stan Hansen is just at his best too. Like,
just two legends beating the tar out of each other. Like, the overhand forearms by Stan, just fucking A, man. Good shit.
Shout out to Elliot's Wrestling on Twitter for the recommendation for that one. He had a tremendous thread that you can check out if you check out his timeline, where he basically posted a whole heap of really underrated Andre the Giant matches. You know, a lot of tremendous stuff. I watched a really great one that he had with Roddy Piper as well. That was like super fun. He has one against Sergeant Slaughter. That's that real, real good as well. One against I can't remember who it is back in the IWE promotion when he's even younger that I really need to get on to watching. But man, so good. Highly recommend checking out all of the Andre. And I really want to now get in to see more younger Andre, because man, this dude is a complete different experience to watching him in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah. You don't say, man. Fuck me.
Tremendous. All right.
Yeah, like literally Andre running was a concept I was unfamiliar with.
So much of it I thought of, like, remember, did you ever hear like the Princess Bride story where that a lot of stuff set up where they're like, oh yeah, we've got the massive Andre the Giant here, but he was like so sort of like beat up and feeble by that point he couldn't even like hold the weight of the princess when she was meant to like fall into his arms. Yeah,
the back brace on him and stuff.
Yeah, so it's wild to see when he was still just such a beast, man. I love Andre the Giant. But yeah, no, the illustration was real fun to do as well. And I love you know, drawing both of these guys. And it was a weird one because normally when I'm drawing either Andre or Stan Hansen, they're obviously looking massive in comparison to the other person that they're wrestling. Because they're two such big old boys. And then you have a match like this, and you're like, they're both huge. So if two guys are huge, no one looks huge, you know?
Yeah, but you smartly added in the referee to kind of give a gauge of the size difference. So good on you.
That was my thinking. So, yeah.
Good on you. I caught on. Yeah, man. I do some of this art stuff myself every once in a while.
Yeah, good eye, my friend. I all right. So next match on the bill. We're now moving to Mexico. We're jumping to the land of Yaves, between two of my all-time favorite luchadors, in the form of Rey Hechicero and the legend of all legends, Blue Panther. This was actually a recent bout. This only took place on the 11th of June of this year for CMLL. It was actually on one of their Tuesday shows at Arena Mexico. So the big ones take place on the Fridays, and then the Tuesdays are normally just kind of like a, you know, a couple thousand people come along, and it's more like a B show kind of thing, so it's not meant to be groundbreaking. But these guys got a singles match on it, and they clearly were like, you know what, motherfucker, this is gonna be our moment. We're gonna have the match that you would expect out of Blue Panther and Rey Hechicero. I was lucky enough to watch it. I currently have the base level CMLL YouTube subscription, that I think is like $11 a month kind of thing. And to watch like the big Friday shows live, that you have to go to the next tier up, and that gets a little bit pricey. So I was very happy that this happened to take place on a Tuesday show, because I got to watch it more currently. And I just was smiling like a geek watching the whole thing. I just loved it so much. Please, what were your initial impressions here?
Well, first things first, I got to ask a question. It's probably going to sound stupid, but I got to ask anyway. Most of these luchador names are in Spanish. Why did Blue Panther decide to just have his name in English? Why? Pantera Azul sounds pretty fucking sick.
That does sound pretty cool. I mean, I don't know. You sort of get a weird combination. I don't know whether in Mexico it sounded a bit more exotic to be
Blue that might Panther, be the case.
You know?
Yeah.
There are a few different Pantera sort of like luchadors out there as well, so maybe that was part of it, a bit of a distinguishing thing.
All right.
I don't know. I mean, we're talking about going back to the what would it have been, the early 80s when Blue Panther originally started his legendary career. So
that's what I mean. Like, he could have been Pantera Azul, the original guy, and everyone's like, shit, that motherfucker's bad as fuck. But he's still bad as fuck, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I was as a response, I have no idea. So if anyone playing at home knows, please please send him to the mailbag.
Like, there's probably no legitimate reason. Like, he just chose that.
Yeah.
Jeremy, don't worry about it. You're asking too many
questions. It's an interesting question. I'm glad you brought it up.
Well, speaking interest of somebody out there, maybe. So first thing I want to say is I thought it was hilarious that as soon as the ref called for this match to begin, the cameraman automatically shot to the breasted women at the top of the ramp just standing there. It's like match begins, but check out these hotties.
Do you know, I was watching another match just today. It was Hechicero against Zack Sabre Jr., which, bloody incredible match as well. They did the exact same thing. So I think it's just one of their standards. For every match that they do, we've just got to take a moment to appreciate the hotties before we focus on the wrestling.
I mean, I respect it. They were attractive women.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Another thing I wanted to mention is play-by-play for a little bit started mentioning Brian Danielson, and I was really disappointed that they didn't play Brian Lloyd Danielson.
I still pop for that, man. Brian Lloyd Danielson.
Oh, fucking great. I really like this match. Didn't take a whole ton of notes because I don't know all the names of these transitions, and it'd be ridiculous. Like, so he went from armbar to leg bar to armbar, and it would just get redundant. But the first thing I noticed that was really, really awesome is Blue Panther does this headstand spot where he's like just kind of on his head and he's like moving his arms around, and eventually he turns that into a leg pick out of nowhere. And I just thought that was incredibly impressive for a man of his age.
Oh, man, I remember that one. And the crowd, went nuts for it as well. He does something. There's something real special about Blue Panther for me, where wherever he does this stuff, he just does it with such a sense of awe and wonder. Like, he's surprised that he was actually able to pull it off, kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. The look on his face sometimes, like, he'll even look at the crowd like, did you fucking see? What? What did I just do? Yeah, it's fucking great.
He's incredulous. The back.
He's incredulous of his own actions. It's pretty impressive.
I love it. So good.
And I didn't realize that this was a rounds match because, again, I don't read or speak Spanish too well. So when the match suddenly ended,
caídas sin límite de tiempo.
I should have known when they said trace. Fuck. But yeah, when all of a sudden the first round ended, I was like, what the fuck? Blue Panther got beat that quick, and then they started over. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I should have paid more attention.
I loved the round system in this. In current day CMLL, it used to be every match, no matter what, is always going to be 2 out of 3 falls, which is really how it should be at the end of the day. But since COVID and since I think they had some sort of restrictions where they had to meet a certain curfew, they started limiting certain ones down to just be single fall matches. So you now kind of get a bit of a weird mix where some matches are single fall, some matches are 2 out of 3. So you do really have to pay attention to the ring introduction to know what's going on there. But I thought this was such a great use of the 2 out of 3 falls. Overall, it's kind of like the first fall was more of our sort of like Yave wrestling kind of stuff. And yeah, obviously Hechicero gets the better of him. And then the second fall is so darn quick.
Yeah. And before they even got into the second fall, the cameraman shoots to the crowd and he catches a guy in a Blue Panther mask. And that guy did not look amused at all that the Blue Panther lost that first round. Then, yeah, Blue Panther, at one point, I love a Fujiwara armbar, especially suddenly out of nowhere. So that was fucking rad. But he still, you know, gets some tapping out super quick with that bad boy.
I have so much respect for submissions that you've got over to the point where if you even slap that baby on, it's an instant tap out. That's what it should be, you know, if you're top tier submissions, I feel. And that's what they've done for the Fujiwara with Panther. You know, I was watching, like, I remember the big mask match where Panther, you know, lost his mask to the Viano. And it was a similar thing there. Like, just as soon as he got that bad boy on, you know, it was over for the fall. And I think it's just so perfect, you know?
Yeah, because honestly, in American wrestling, it's so often just used as a rest spot to get a guy down and just hold them there for a little bit so they can both catch their breath a bit. But yeah, here, fucking gets it on, locks it on, done. And he'd even like cinching it, he just got him to the mat and it was over. So that was rad. And then at this moment, something awesome that happened. Cameraman shoots to the crowd and catches three happy gringos, the white family enjoying the professional lucha libre. I thought it was hilarious. The young boy in a lucha libre mask, just having the time of their lives.
So wholesome. I remember
white people taco night. It was amazing.
It's one of my favorite things of like just seeing drunk gringos on screen between falls or any crowd shot. I remember there was a great thing when a while back everyone was like talking about how every match has to have sort of like character development and stories and all this kind of hokey shit. And someone had this amazing tweet where they basically were like, you know what? In CMLL, if ever there is a moment where you think there might be some character development going on, we quickly cut away from it for a shot of some gringo like chugging down a beer and eating a churro. Yeah,
so true. This was just a wholesome family enjoying Lucha Libre, but it was so funny. Just so random. Like, look at these characters. Yeah, back to the match. The third fall was so crazy, dude. They just went all out and busted out all their shit. It was fucking tremendous. And
the third was the real epic one, you know, what you really expect. And I think there's a great psychology of it. Some people sort of poo-poo the kind of thing you often see with the first two falls out of a 2 out of 3, where, you know, what finishes one of those early falls might, you know, that it's not going to finish the last one. But to me, if you're thinking about that psychologically, if this were a shoot and you know you're possibly going to have to go three falls in this affair, well, you're not going to like really take some severe damage in that first fall and really like hang on. Like you're gonna tap out, strategically get out of it, and then come back for the second. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you're definitely not going to bust out all your best shit at the very beginning, and you know. You might have an ace in the hole you want to bring out later, such as that. I'm not sure what to call it, but that sweet leg scissors that Hechicero uses, where he just kind of falls to his back instead of fully rotating for like a flying head scissors.
Oh, and he lands at like a guillotine leg drop kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. What is? I've only seen him do it, I think, and it's fucking killer.
I think he invented that, dude. Like, I mean, I'm not saying that with, like, any authority, like I'm a lucha expert or anything, but he's
It's on Wikipedia now. Chris Bryan says Hechicero invented this particular move.
No, I hope I'm right. Oh, but yeah, so sick. The Hechicero's moveset is so rad, man. Like, it's obviously we get all of the awesome, like, hold for hold, really super innovative stuff that you never see anyone else do. But then, like, has stuff like that, like his sweet strikes, the knee in the corner. Like,
Step up knee is fucking killer. He did it twice in this match, and both were fucking rad. I really like all the goofy shit he does too, like where he pretends he's like creating an orb in his hand. Like that shit is so fucking.
He's
awesome.
A wizard, dude.
Yeah, I know, bro. Even more so than that fucking Chris Jericho, I'll tell you that much. But I also like how good of a base he is. Like, he's just helping, I know not totally helping, but helping Blue Panther getting from move to move, even like assisting mission, getting his hands in the right places. Like, just so good. All looks so fluid.
Yeah, there's a lot where if you're really watching this one closely, you can see, I absolutely love
the stronger, younger guy.
But yeah, it's like you can see it means a lot to Hechicero to be wrestling a guy, you know, that is obviously such an idol to him as Blue Panther, and that he's gonna, you know, bring him to the best match that they can possibly have. But yeah, like you mentioned the stiff up knee, it made me remember like what the coolest bit of that was. It just looked so violent against older gentlemen such as Panther, and then Panther's like celibate of sort of like the head bubble kind of like thing. Yeah, just
like we were talking about him being incredulous about his own offense, he was like, "Whoa, what the fuck? That rocked me." Yeah, I love. Yeah, he has the best facial reaction. Maybe that's why even more beneficial that he doesn't wear the mask anymore, because he can sell even further.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I just love he does all his shit. Like, he does the flipping senton from the outside and the fans go fucking nuts. Then he does a tope suicida, like, pretty rapidly after that. Mm-hmm. Then just a bit later, he's doing his crossbody off the fucking apron or the ramp.
That was it, man. I was like, I was stoked off of the first, you know, like tope suicida, and I was like, man, yeah, we've really seen it all tonight. Done. Three dives, and the one off the ramp was like fucking spectacular, man. Like I was very close to making that the moment of the illustration. But the only negative of that is, like, it is this amazing visual of, you know, the older Blue Panther just, like, diving and all of the awe and wonder of that moment. But you're just seeing sort of the back of Hechicero's mask, like, when he's sort of, like, standing there kind of, like, ready to catch him or whatever. So that was a reason why I thought this other one of where it's, like, you know, Panther's really, like, taking him to school, and Hechicero kind of has this like face where he's like, he's in the corner just having a little breather, just like, the fuck, this old man is beating my ass, the fuck's going on.
Hilarious. That's awesome. Yeah, it's fucking great. And just the subtle splashes of the pink is fucking awesome on there. I love it. Or salmon, is that salmon, Chris, or is that pink?
You could call it one or the other. I think salmon sounds nice.
Oh, salmon.
I mean, it's a beautiful mask. I think Hechicero's overall look is absolutely top tier, between like how beautiful the mask is, his
the thick
sweet
waistband,
like, titty straps. Yeah, thick waistband. Man, he's got it going on.
Yep. He even does the arm tape, so he like accents his muscles. Like, yeah, he's super rad. Also, I want to say that Blue Panther, I didn't watch many of his matches before, but he definitely has put himself into favorite lucha contention. I must say, he's fucking awesome. I just love, as we mentioned, all the goofy reactions and shit. And man, you guys have been doing it for so fucking long. How could you not respect this motherfucker?
Oh, absolutely. I definitely think I need to go back when there's a week that I, you know, there's not a lot of current stuff going on. I definitely need to treat myself to some sort of like Blue Panther in his prime, like 90s, early 2000s kind of stuff. I hear there's a tremendous series of matches that he had with Love Machine Art Bar back in the day that I cannot imagine anything but incredible. Same, he had a really great one that I haven't actually seen with Atlantis that's on my watch list. Two of my favorites there. So don't worry, everyone. There's much more Blue Panther goodness to come.
Yes, indeed.
But yeah, I think I can't remember the specifics of the finish of this, but after we got all of the best of Blue Panther,
It was Hechicero like just sort of like just wrapped him up a bunch of different ways and eventually got this crazy arm bar where he's like pulling it from behind. Yeah, it was, yeah, it looked not comfortable. I'll say that much.
Yes. He just
and then the best bit, Chris, at the very, very end, crowd shot of the guy who was previously in the Blue Panther mask, and he had a different mask on, this yellow one with like a pentagram or something on it. Like, he has now turned his back on Blue Panther after this loss.
No,
it was rad. Oh man,
I'd like to think that people at these shows kind of treat it like football, where you're like a football fan, you know, you got the mask or the jersey or whatever, you've really committed, and at a certain point your team loses so many times, you're like, you know what, I'm picking another team. Maybe that's what happened. I don't know. But tremendous, tremendous stuff, and so much heart in it. And yeah, I just adored this match. This was one that it, you know, might be up to the eye of the beholder. Not sure that everyone would love this match as much as I do, but I'm stoked to hear that it sounds like you enjoyed it, my friend.
Yeah, I just think Blue Panther's rad, and even though, you know, he's up there, he's still fucking giving it his all. The three crazy dives toward the end, I was just like, yeah, this guy, he's giving it all for this audience.
Mm-hmm. And then that brings us on to our final match of our triple main event of matches of the week, that being our Joshi match from 1991, September 7th for All Japan Women's. The show is entitled AJW The Exciting Zone at Corican Hall for the WWA World Championship between Bull Nakano and Kyoko Inoue.
Yeah, man. First off, I gotta say, I love the way these two women wrestle, because they immediately start beating the shit out of each other and just screaming at the same time, like guttural screams, like, ah! It's like the fucking war cries are fucking awesome.
Oh, all about it. And the entrances, don't get me started on the entrances. Something about like Kyoko Inoue, like running down to the ring, the tassels, the Ultimate Warrior, like face paint. I like to think that she just saw the Ultimate Warrior and was like, yeah, dog.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's a good... I like that theory as well. That's awesome.
I don't know if that's true.
Hey, well, that's we're running with it. I've just added it to Wiki. I just added it to Wiki. Chris Bryan. Slightly.
All right. We got a lot of Chris experts' opinions adding on here that I have no idea if any of them are true. But I'd like to think she's a tad better in-ring wrestler than Ultimate Warrior was. But
yeah,
that's not for me to say. Who knows? Just the entrances and the contrast between the two of like her energy versus like Bull's energy.
Yeah, Kyoko looks so excited at first, but there's a brief moment where like she looks very afraid after she gets Bull all bloody. I just love that bit. Like, blood just starts pouring down Bull's face, and she's like starts stalking toward Kyoko, and she looks scared as fuck, understandably. Bull's like the final boss of female wrestlers to me. Like, she's just a fucking badass.
Yeah. It's like a kind of like a monster movie, you know, where she, I think she like took a post or went into the rail on the outside or something, came back just looking somehow even more badass than she did previously. Big fan specifically of this match as well because of her wearing that amazing Grateful Dead shirt.
Hell yeah, I have like a parody of that.
I have the same one. I think we both have a good shirt, that bootleg order, right?
Yep.
Yeah. But she somehow looks even more terrifying, covered in blood, approaching her opponent than she did beforehand. And then the hair sort of goes from like the classic, you know, up straight blue hair to when the blood kind of like gets it all over the place. Such a cool visual.
Yeah, man, it's fucking gnarly. And she's like, these ladies, like, really? They don't appear to be pulling any of this shit. Like, there's a lariat that where Bull like takes Kyoko's head off, and then she like this high angle power bomb that looks stiff as fuck because this ring does not move whatsoever. It's one of the stiffest rings, like 80s WWE stiff. It's fucking nuts.
A lot of this looks quite gnarly.
I have to ask a question. That head scissors takedown, that where the wrestler like runs and jumps, it kind of flips upside down and catches both the sides of the feet on the side of the head and like pulls them over. What is that actually called? Because I want to remember in case I have to call it in a match. You know the spot I'm talking about, friend?
I'm a little foggy on it, to be honest. So you're not talking about like the classic sort of like, you know, hurricane.
It's like a head scissors
kind of deal.
No, it's not a hurricane runner because she doesn't jump up and like put her legs over each side. It's just she flips upside down and catches both the sides of her feet on the neck. I'll try to pull it up and see if I can send it to you. Vamp,
not like
talk.
like a T. Harris kind of thing.
That's what it is. T. Harris. That's the name I was looking for. Thank you, sir.
Woo! We got there.
Yep. See, I knew I were describing. You would figure it out. No, you did it. Proud of you, buddy.
Thank you. We got there.
Or you're wrong, and I'm adding it to Wikipedia as Chris Bryan.
I'm gonna have to issue so many corrections at the end of this episode.
Yes,
man. there's a really interesting point in this match. So again, it's sort of like, to me, broad strokes, and it's kind of like we have this crazy energetic, enthusiastic Kyoko Noe, who's just wrestling with so much heart. She's so much smaller than Bull, and she's also like such a badass actual wrestler, you know, when it comes to the submission kind of stuff. Almost like you have like the fiery charisma of a fucking, I don't know, someone very Ultimate Warrior, for example, meets like the wrestling skills of like a Dean Malenko, and that's kind of what we have here. But I loved it that so we have that, and obviously, you know, Bull is this massive unbeatable beast. And there's a few bits where you know, Kyoko was going for, I can't remember if she's going for like the surfboard stretch or something like that. And she tries quite a few times to get Bull off of this, and it ain't working. And then the crowd like really gets behind her to try to get her to do it again. And Bull is just very big, you know? And it doesn't work again. But somehow this, you know, some people could look at this as like a massive fuck off of the match, but then the way they sort of like went with it and kept going, and it's almost like it got Kyoko Inoue over even more to the fans because they know she tried, even though she fucked up, but she tried and she tried again and she tried again. She still couldn't get it, but it didn't stop her from trying, and she ended up putting on like a Texas cloverleaf or something else, you know, instead. But I remember thinking that when I first saw this, that, you know, that's something where some people would be like, oh, botch, all right, this match has been taken down a star. But, you know, it's like we say sometimes these rough around the edges bits kind of like somehow add to it. Sure. I don't know, what was your feeling seeing that bit?
Well, no, I remember there was a bit where she kept on muscling it up or trying to get her over and eventually got her up onto her knees at least and pulled her back. And yes. Bull was like, has her head back screaming and the blood's just pouring down her face. It's one of the coolest visuals. I even recorded it and sent it to my friend, like, look at this fucking shit. Yeah, you're 100% right. Kyoko is so tenacious. It's very
tenacious
impressive.
Tenacious is an excellent word.
Yeah, yeah. She, like, throws her entire body into everything. And because she is so much smaller, she needs that extra weight to get the impact. But it's definitely fighting from the bottom babyface stuff. But totally credible. She doesn't look like just going through the emotions. Some, you know what I mean? Like, just the fear I mentioned earlier at the beginning of the match was only there for a brief moment. After that, it was totally gone. You could see it in her face. She did not give a fuck.
Yeah, and I think it's the, like, that's the emotion that we were, I was talking about before as well.
For sure.
Like, the real expression of this match and the heart of it. Like, there was so much heart.
Like, she tries to go for the giant swing. Like, she's going to try the giant swing this woman. She literally gets around for like a quarter of a revolution, but she fucking got her up.
And the crowd, like, ate it up, dude. That was my other favorite part. Like, for all of this, this Korakuen crowd was bloody electric. And, you know, so many, like, you know, like, female fans as well that, you know, I think this match was hugely influential, you know, throughout the rest of the 90s. And, you know, you think of all the people that are, like, watching this, and like, man, that is fucking badass. And it feels like it took, you know, American women's wrestling so long to catch up to that point, you know?
Yeah, man, that's why my opinion of women's wrestling took a while to become respectable. And I don't mean the women's wrestling was respectable. My opinion was terrible until I saw, you know, some of this stuff. And the women in the late 90s started to pick it up, kind of. Trish was a good example of that in the WWE. But yeah, women's wrestling really wasn't great for a period of time in the US, unfortunately.
And it sucks because it shouldn't have been that way. Like, we had, you know, do you remember when we got a brief glimpse of Bull Nakano in WWF, you know, having rad matches against Medusa, and then Vince is just like, oh no, we cannot have women wrestling like this and showing up the guys. All right, let's scrap this whole division. Goodbye.
Yeah. So ridiculous. And yeah, the Bull Nakano brief stint was something that, like, when I was that age, blew my mind. Because you look at her, that is a fucking star. Like, the look itself is so cool. She looks unusual, but also totally badass. It's like, yeah, so marketable, in my opinion. They could have, like, put her on shirts and just made a ton of bucks.
I mean, they knew how to market it in Japan. Just apparently Vince McMahon Jr.'s WWF was not ready for it at the time. But yeah, man, I and going into, like, the finishing sort of, like, bit of this match, and seeing, like, Bull really break out some crazy offense, you know, the big kick out of her signature leg drop, which I must say I think the greatest guillotine leg drop of in all of wrestling. I don't think anyone has done it with such I don't know, force, just impressiveness. Oomph is a great word for it.
Those thick thighs end lives, man. Thick thighs end lives.
Man, I guess a lot of this match that I was watching, and I was like, you know, I think Bull's actually pretty hot.
What do you mean? Like, you're just coming to that conclusion? Like, that's been my thing the whole time.
It's like that meme, right? Fucking
kill me. Like, you need, I will lay down for that leg drop. No, I'm just joking.
And then, like, somehow Kyoko Noe kicks out of this leg drop. Crowd goes insane. We had, I can't even remember what it was, but it was one of the gnarliest looking rad suplexes that I've ever seen that Bull broke out at another point. That was, like, mind-blowing. Yeah,
she did a bridging suplex at one point that was so high angle, it looked like she was going to drop Kyoko right on her head. And then, like, really rapidly after that is when Kyoko does that German where the positioning was so good for a false finish. It was so good. Bull barely got her foot touching the bottom rope. This was before the finishing bit. I just wanted to give respect to that because the positioning was so perfect.
Yeah. And the moonsault from Bull. Completely forgot that she did a sick moonsault, man.
Yeah. There was one other spot before the moonsault was Bull did, like, a reverse DDT, like, kind of lifted it up and doing the reverse DDT. They called it a tiger driver. Is that a variation that I was unaware of?
Ooh, perhaps. I can't quite remember the move.
It was like just like a reverse DDT, but literally they said tiger driver. I was like, what the fuck? Ooh. Sorry for my terrible Japanese.
Could be.
The moonsault itself, to go back to it, was incredible, and pin position, like, pinpoint accuracy, so good. She rules. Death to Kyoko.
Yeah, this just was everything to me, man. Like, this, you know, I think Kyoko Noe is one of my all-time favorite, you know, female wrestlers, Joshi wrestlers. And she's a name that I think some fans, like, it might not be as familiar as, like, a you know, Manami Toyota or Akira Hokuto or Bull Nakano or Aja Kong. But she is... was and she still wrestles to this day. It's totally awesome. So yeah, if you dig this, I highly recommend checking out more Kyoko and Noe.
Yeah, I'm familiar just because of a bunch of wrestling gifs over time, because she does some pretty insane stuff, like all her backwards senton splashes basically off the fucking second rope. Like, without even looking, she's just throwing herself backwards into people, and it's totally nuts and totally awesome.
Oh, that reminds me. She did that in this match, like, with such reckless abandon.
Yeah, at least three or four times.
And it shouted to me, like, okay, I know where Darby got the got the coffin drop from, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely could be some inspiration. Gimmick infringement, even. Bastard.
And need to give massive shout outs to her incredible entrance music of Van Halen.
Yeah, that was fucking an actual surprise. I was like, what? Actually, I shouldn't be shocked, because music rights aren't necessarily so important in professional wrestling.
I reckon that'd probably be pretty expensive to license these days, but yeah, I guess in Japan you can get around those things. And I popped big for balls, like 80s monster movie theme music too, like with the synthy awesomeness, like you're watching a John Carpenter movie or something. So good.
Tremendous.
Yeah. So yeah, three very enjoyable matches. I think this little wrestling thing is it's best when you get such eclectic variety. And that's what I really used to love about, you know, watching some of those comp tapes back in the day that, like, Rob Naylor used to put together, or like Phil Schneider, or any of these, like, really tape trading, like, OGs. So being able to sort of have a little eclectic mix of matches like this, that can go together in such a weird way, it makes me smile in the same way.
Yeah, man. You don't see regular wrestling shows with three matches like this on them, and maybe they should more, you know, mix it up, get some more crazy shit going on. I'd love to see a death match and a Yave match on the same show.
More shit for the freaks.
Yeah, for the sickos, as Tony likes to call them. My good buddy Tone.
Oh, Tone Bone, man, I need to get onto that show that the Segunda Caída dudes put together over Mania weekend. That one sounded like it had exactly what we're talking about, that kind of like wild eclectic sicko mix of wrestling between deathmatch stuff and crazy submission Yave stuff and all of that kind of thing. I definitely have that show on my watch list if we're talking about stuff for the sickos.
For sure. Hey, actually, you know what? If you ever want to do a show watch recap here and you could pick one of those matches to draw, I would definitely be down to watch that show.
Ooh, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. All right. Let me know. All right. Well, I think that that Dean show might be the one, because I'm very excited about that. All right. Well, friend, do you have any other thoughts about this trio of matches or anything else in general?
Well, I don't know. I've said quite a bit about these three matches here, so probably done with that. I just want to say thanks again for having me on the show, and look forward to watching Dean with you.
Dude, I would love that. I very much appreciate you coming on the show, especially when it looked like there was a bunch of real life things that might be making it difficult here. But no, dude, always appreciate you. Do you have anything that you'd like to plug-ski today?
Sure, I'm more than happy to plug. I want to first plug me, Jeremy Tate, aka James Vanderbeek. You can follow me on social media, Instagram
and
Twitter. Please do, A lot of people find me amusing. But yeah, it's at James Vanderbeek, J-A-I-M-S Vanderbeek. If you like wrestling and stupid jokes, and that's basically it. That's where you want to go. And I also want to promote the wrestling company I'm associated with. We actually have a show coming up this weekend, Saturday, June the 29th, at Old Stove Brewing, Ship Canal in Seattle. We'll also be on IWTV. So if you want to watch some wrestling with me and my friends, please do. Yeah, we also have another show coming up next month. If you're interested, which is going to be on the 12th of July, it's SOS Pro Wrestling Presents Wet Hot Island Summer. It's a wacky wrestling show where we're all on an abandoned island. It's good times.
These show names keep getting better and better.
Or deserted, not abandoned, deserted. Yeah, they're kind of wacky, aren't they? It'd be a weird abandoned island we're all sitting on there.
I'm into it.
I need to learn how to remember what words mean.
This is an island that used to be... This island used to be quite an exciting tourist hotspot, but then the currency went to shit and it's since been abandoned. And we've rediscovered it. We're having a wrestling show there.
Woo!
Good times, my dude. Well, I also would like to thank everyone for listening to the show. I thank you as well for the people that, financially support the things and buy my art, which makes me very happy. Buying art prints of said matches of the week. Sometimes people even buy the original pen illustrations that made that digital illustration a thing, which I think is very cool as well. If you dig that kind of stuff, if you're not already, follow me at Chris Things on the Instagram, Chris Things on the Twitter, and of course, don't forget to go to christhings.com.au, where you can check out all of the different art prints. I've got originals, I've got t-shirts, I've got calendars, mugs, what have yous. If you dig that stuff and want to have it on your wall, please know that I always feel extremely complimented by you choosing to do such things. So thank you very much there. I think we've reached the tail end of the show here. And I almost forgot to do something very important, which is thanking the guys that allow me to do this thing, Social Suplex. That is the Social Suplex Podcast Network, socialsuplex.com. A whole bunch of other rad wrestling podcasts on there as well, including One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, Imps WWE Adventure, the Trish and Sarah Podcast, and of course, how could I forget, Tunnel Talk. which we have a lot of good time riffing on what that show might be.
I didn't think of any other names for that at all right now.
But yeah, thanks Social Suplex. But lastly, thank you to you, the listener, for spending an hour and a bit listening to us ramble on like the... Do you, my friend Jeremy, would you consider yourself a ADHD-er?
You what? Are you kidding me? Yes.
I think there's a bit of identity in it. The outside 100%. World might look at you and say, hey, that motherfucker is definitely ADD, but I don't know.
100%. People, look at my Twitter. Look, it's like stream of consciousness nonsense. Oh, man. Can I say one last thing before
please,
we get out of here, Chris?
Please, please.
Remember, huck two on that thing.
What a way to end it. Beautiful.
I just thought of it literally right now. Like, oh, I gotta say huck two.
We're so current.
All right, pal, that was a lot of fun. Hit me up about Dean, because that sounds a lot of fun.
Dude, I would.
And I want to make sure that. I watch it close to when we record, so we're not just sitting there like, yeah, I think I remember this thing.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. Like, I normally try to rewatch the matches. For this one, it was like, honestly, like I didn't want to, you know, make you have to wait any longer. But also, I was like, you know what? If I watch it too close, I'm gonna have too many notes. I'm gonna get too bogged down. So, you know, I don't know. Is it just unprofessionalism? Maybe a bit.
Yeah. I respect it. The lack of respect for your own product, I respect.
You keep it together, man. You're the one taking the notes here. You're keeping us afloat.
Yeah, otherwise I wouldn't remember. It's that whole ADHD thing, buddy. All right, pal. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, dude. Appreciate you.
Later. Peace.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.